putting on a show as she bends down to pick up her black panties from the floor and shimmies them up her thighs. That she isn't wearing a bra is wonderfully apparent as she shakes her body.
Good. It's easier this way.
I point to the contraption on my head. I really need a fucking haircut, but Steph's friend, a lavender-haired chick named Mads, has always been the one to cut it. My blood begins to boil at the thought of Steph. That stupid fucking...
Earth to Harden.
Tessa's voice brings me out of my hateful thoughts. I snap my head up.
Sorry.
Back in her pajamas, Tessa snuggles up next to me, and strangely grabs the remote to the TV and starts flipping around, trying to find something to watch. I'm a little dazed, so the cool-down feels comfortable. But after a few minutes, I realize she sighed quite a few times. And when I look over at her, there's a deep scowl on her face, like finding a program to watch is more frustrating than it should be.
Something wrong?
I ask her.
No,
she lies.
Tell me now,
I press, and she lets out a quick breath.
It's nothing. I'm just a little...
Her cheeks flush.
Wound up.
Wound up? You should be anything but wound up after that. I pull back a little and look at her.
I didn't... You know, I didn't...
She stutters. Her shyness never fails to surprise me. One minute she's moaning into my ear to fuck her harder, faster, deeper, and the next she can't form a sentence.
Spill it,
I demand.
I didn't finish.
What? I choke.
Had I really been that consumed by my own pleasure that I didn't notice when she didn't come? You stopped right before...
She quietly explains.
Why didn't you say something? Come here, then.
I tug at her shirt to lift it over her head.
What are you going to do?
She asks, excitement laced in her tone.
Shh.
I don't know what I want to do. I want to make love to her again, but I need a little more time to refuel.
Wait. Got it. We're going to do something that we've only done once.
I smirk at her, and her eyes widen.
Because, you know, practice makes perfect. What's that?
And just like that, her excitement has been replaced by nervousness. I lie back on my elbows and beckon to her to come to me.
I don't get it, she says.
Come here. Put your thighs here. I tap the empty space on both sides of my head.
What?
Tessa, come here. And then spread your thighs over my face so I can get you off right and proper. I explain slowly and clearly.
Oh,
she squeaks. I see the hesitation in her eyes, and I reach over to turn the lamp off. I want her to be as comfortable as possible. Despite the darkness, I can still make out the soft planes of her body, the fullness of her chest, the sexy curve of her hips. Tessa removes her panties, and within seconds she's following my instructions and kneeling over me.
This is quite the view I have here,
I tease her, and my vision disappears. She's pulled my T-shirt down over my eyes.
Well, this is much hotter, actually.
I smile against her thighs. She smacks me playfully on the head in response.
Really, though, it's really fucking hot,
I add. I hear her laugh in the darkness, and I bring my hands to her hips, guiding her movements. Once my tongue touches her, she begins to move her hips on her own, tugging at my hair and whispering my name until she loses herself in the pleasure I'm giving her.
Chapter 99, Tessa. I come back to reality, slowly, unwillingly, but Happy Harden's lying next to me.
Hey.
He smiles, kissing me on my lips. I laugh. It's a lazy sound, not wanting to move. My body is slightly sore, but in the best way. I wish you weren't leaving tomorrow, I whisper, while running my fingertips over one of the branches on his tattoo. The tree is dark, haunting, and intricate. I wonder, if Harden were getting this tattoo now, would he get the dead tree again? Or would there be just a few leaves on the branches, now that he's happier, more lively?
Me too,
he answers simply. I can't mask the desperation behind my plea when I say, then don't. Harden's fingers spread across my back and he presses my naked body closer to his.
I don't want to, but I know you're only saying that because I just made you come repeatedly.
A horrified scoff falls from my lips. That's not true. Harden's body shakes gently with an amused chuckle. It really isn't the only reason. Maybe we could be with each other on the weekends for a little while and see where it goes from there.
You expect me to drive here every weekend?
Not everyone. I'll come there, too. I tilt my head to look into his eyes. It's working for us so far.
Tessa,
he sighs.
I already told you how I felt about the long-distance shit.
My eyes flicker to the ceiling fan slowly spinning around and around in the dimness of the room. Rachel is pouring marinara sauce into Monica's handbag on the television screen. Yes, yet here you are, I challenge him. He sighs and tugs gently at the ends of my hair, forcing me to look at him once more.
Touché.
Well, I think there's some sort of compromise that can be reached here, don't you?
What's your offer?
He asks softly, briefly closing his eyes to take a deep breath. I don't know exactly. Give me a moment, I say. What exactly am I offering him? It's in the best interest of both of our sanities to stay somewhat distant from each other for now. As much as my heart forgets all the terrible things that Harden and I have been through in the past, my brain won't allow me to give up all of my remaining dignity. I am in Seattle, following my dream, alone, with no apartment because of Harden's possessive nature and the unwillingness of both of us to compromise over even the most trivial details. I don't know, really, I finally say when I can't come up with a solid suggestion.
Well, do you want me around still? Just for the weekends, at least?
He asks. His fingers twist and twirl my hair. Yes.
Every weekend?
Mostly, I smile.
Do you want to talk on the phone each day like we did this week?
Yes. I loved the simple way Harden and I spoke on the phone, neither of us even noticing the minutes and hours as they ticked by.
So everything will be the same as it was this week, then? I don't know about that,
he says. Why not? It seemed to work for him so far, so why would he object to continuing the same way?
Because, Tessa, you're here in Seattle without me, and we aren't actually together. You could see someone else or meet someone.
Harden, I lift myself onto my elbow and look down at him. His eyes bore into mine, and a lock of my unruly blonde hair falls onto his face. Without breaking eye contact, or even so much as a blink, his fingers move to tuck the fallen hair back behind my ear. I'm not planning on seeing or meeting anyone else. All I want out of this is some independence, and for both of us to be able to communicate.
Why is it so important for you to be independent all of a sudden?
He asks. His thumb and forefinger glide across the shell of my ear, sending a shiver down my spine. If he's trying to distract me, he's succeeding. Despite his gentle touch and burning jade eyes, I continue in my quest to make him understand where I'm coming from. It's not a sudden thing. I've mentioned this to you before. I also hadn't noticed just how dependent on you I was until recently. And I don't like it. I don't like being that way.
I do,
he says quietly. I know you do, but I don't, I say, refusing to allow the confidence in my voice to falter. A part of me pats myself on the back, then rolls her eyes at me because she isn't buying it.
Well, how do I play into this independent shit?
Just keep doing what you're doing now. I have to be able to make decisions without thinking about having your permission or what you would think about them.
You definitely don't think about having my permission now, or you wouldn't do half the shit you do.
I don't want to have a fight. Harden, I warn him. This is important to me. I need to be able to think for myself. We should be partners. Equals. Neither of us should hold more power than the other. I struggle to find the words, sifting through my mind for a better way to explain what I want, what I need. I have to do this. This is part of who I am, or who I want to be. I'm working hard to find myself. to find out who I am on my own, with or without Harden.
Equals? Power? You obviously have more power here. I mean, come on.
It's not only for me. It's been good for you, too. You know it has.
I guess so. But what does that say about us that we can only get along if we're in different cities?
He asks, putting into words the question that's been nagging at me since he arrived. Well, we'll figure that out later.
Sure.
He stubbornly rolls his eyes but softens the reaction by kissing my forehead. Remember what you said about there being a difference between loving someone and not being able to live without them? I ask.
I don't ever want to hear that statement again, really.
I swipe his damp hair off of his forehead. You're the one who said it, I remind him. My fingertips graze along the outline of his nose down to his swollen lips. I've been thinking about it so much since then, I admit. Harden groans in annoyance.
Why?
Because you said it for a reason, didn't you?
Out of anger, that's all. I didn't have a clue what it even meant. I was just being a dick.
Well, either way, I keep thinking about it. I gently tap on the tip of his nose.
Well, I wish you wouldn't, because there's no difference between the two.
His words fall slowly between us, his tone thoughtful. How so? He gives me a small smile.
I can't live without you, and I love you. They go hand in hand. If I could live without you, I wouldn't be as in love with you as I am, and I clearly cannot be far from you.
I'll say. I bite back the giggle that's threatening to emerge. He notices my lightness.
I know you aren't talking about me. You nearly busted your ass running to tackle me when I arrived.
Even in the darkness of the room, I can see his bright, widening smile, and my breath catches as I take in the raw beauty of him. When he behaves this way, unguarded and natural, there's nothing better in my world. I knew you were going to torture me for that. I swat at his bare chest, and his hand flies up to catch my wrist between his long fingers.
Are you trying to get rough with me again? Look what happened last time.
He lifts his head off the mattress, and the heat begins to spread down my body, resting between my already sore thighs. Can you stay one more day? I dodge his remark about being rough. I need to know if I'm going to have more time with him tomorrow so we can spend the remainder of the morning hours, well, getting rough. Please, I add, snuggling my head into the crook of his neck.
Fine,
he says. I can feel his jaw move as he smiles against my forehead.
But only if you blindfold me again.
In one quick motion, he wraps his arms around my back and flips my body under his, and seconds later, we're lost in each other, again and again.
Chapter 100. Harden. Kimberly is sitting at the breakfast bar when I walk into the kitchen. Her face is free of makeup, and her hair is pulled back away from her face. I don't think I've ever seen her without a shit ton of crap on her face, and for Vance's sake, I contemplate hiding the shit from her because she looks much better without it.
"Well, look who's finally awake,"
she says in a chipper tone. "Yeah, yeah," I groan, and walk straight past her to the coffee machine nestled in the corner of the dark granite countertop.
"What time are you leaving?"
she asks, while picking at a bowl of lettuce. "Not until tomorrow, if that's okay. Or do you want me out now?" I fill a mug with the black liquid and turn to face her.
"Of course you can stay,"
she grins.
"As long as you aren't being an asshole to Tessa."
"Actually, I'm not." I roll my eyes as Vance enters the room.
"You need to get a tighter leash on this one. Perhaps even a muzzle," I tell him.
A deep bellowing laugh comes from her fiancé, just as Kimberly raises her middle finger to me.
"So classy," I taunt her.
"You're in an awfully cheery mood."
Christian grins wickedly, and Kimberly shoots him a glare. What the hell is that about?
"Wonder why that is,"
he adds, and she elbows him.
"Christian!"
she scolds, and he shakes his head. His hand lifts in defense to block her from repeating the playful assault.
"Probably because he's missed Tessa,"
Kimberly suggests, and eyes Christian as he circles around the oversized island to grab a banana from the fruit basket. His eyes twinkle in amusement as he pulls down the peel of a banana.
I heard midnight workouts will do that.
My blood turns cold.
What did you say? Calm down. He shut the camera off before the good stuff.
Kimberly assures me.
Camera? Fuck. A fucking course this asshole would have a camera in his gym. Hell, every main access room is probably equipped with security cameras. He's always been more paranoid behind that slick demeanor than he lets on. What did you see?
I growl, trying to keep my pulsing anger at bay.
Nothing. Only that Tessa came into the room. He knew better than to continue.
Kimberly bites back a grin, and relief floods through me. I was too caught up in the moment, caught up in Tessa, to think about shit like security cams. I scowl at Vance.
Why were you even watching the footage?
That's pretty fucking creepy that you were watching me work out.
Don't flatter yourself. I was checking the kitchen monitor because it had a short. The gym just happened to be playing alongside it at the time.
Sure, I say, stretching the word out.
Harden's staying another night. That's fine, right?
Kim asks him.
Of course it's fine. I don't know why your ass isn't here to stay anyway. You know I'll pay you more than Bolthouse.
You didn't the first time. That was the problem. I remind him with a smug grin.
That's because you were only a freshman in college at the time. You were lucky to have a paid internship, let alone an actual job without a degree.
He shrugs, trying to dismiss my argument. I cross my arms in defense.
Bolthouse disagrees with you.
They are twats. Need I remind you that in the last year alone, Vance Publishing has surpassed them by a huge margin. I've expanded here to Seattle, and I plan on opening a New York office by next year.
Is there a point to all this bragging? I ask.
Yes. Point is, Vance is better, bigger, and happens to be where she's working.
He doesn't have to say Tessa's name for me to feel the weight of his words.
You'll be graduating after this semester. Don't make an impulsive decision now that will impact the entirety of your career before it even begins. He takes a quick bite of the fruit in his hand, and I scowl at him, trying to think of a sharp reply. I can't seem to come up with one.
Bolthouse has an office in London.
He looks at me in mocking disbelief.
Who's going back to London? You?
He doesn't hide the sarcasm in his voice.
Possibly. I had planned on it, and still am.
Yeah, so did I.
He glances at his future wife.
You'll never go back to live there, just as I won't either.
Kimberly flushes and gushes at his words, and I come to the conclusion that they're the most obnoxious couple I've ever encountered. It's like you can see how much they love each other just by watching them interact. It's annoying and uncomfortable.
Point proven. Christian snickers.
I didn't agree with you.
I snap.
Yes.
Kimberly butts in, like the bullbuster she is.
But you didn't disagree, either.
Without another word, I take my coffee mug and my balls as far away from Kimberly as I can get them.
Chapter 101. Tessa. The morning arrives much too quickly, and when I wake up, I'm alone in the bed. The empty side of the mattress still bears the imprint of Harden's body, so he must have gotten up only a few minutes ago. Right on cue, he enters the room quietly, coffee mug in hand.
Good morning,
he says when he notices that I'm awake. Morning. My throat is tight and dry. Images of Harden moving in and out of my mouth with furious thrusts makes my insides tighten.
Are you feeling okay?
He places the steamy mug of coffee on the dresser and walks over to the bed. He sits down next to me on the edge of the mattress.
Answer me,
he calmly adds when I take too long to respond. Yeah, just sore. I stretch my arms and legs out in front of me. Yes, definitely sore. Where did you go?
I went to get some coffee, and I had to call Landon to tell him I won't be home today.
He tells me.
If you still want me to stay, that is.
I do, I nod at him. But why do you have to tell Landon? Hardin runs his hand over his hair, and his eyes concentrate on reading my expression. I get the feeling that I'm missing something here. Answer me, I say, using his own words back at him.
He's babysitting your dad.
Why? Why would my father need a babysitter?
Your dad's trying to get sober, that's why. And I'm not stupid enough to leave him at that apartment by himself.
You have liquor there, don't you?
No, I tossed it. Just drop this, okay?
His tone is no longer gentle. It's urgent, and he's clearly on edge. I'm not going to just drop it. Is there something that I should know? Because I feel like I'm being left out of the loop here again. I cross my arms over my chest, and he takes a deep, dramatic breath, his eyes closing with the gesture.
Yes, there is something that you don't know about, but I'm begging you to just trust me, okay?
How bad? I ask. The possibilities terrify me.
Just trust me, okay?
Trust you to do what?
Trust that I will take care of all of this shit so that by the time I tell you what happened, it won't matter anymore. You have enough shit going on right now. Please, just trust me on this. Let me do this for you and let it go,
he urges. The initial paranoia and panic that always come with these types of situations flutter through me, and I'm moments away from snatching Hardin's phone from him and calling Landon myself. The look on Hardin's face, though, stops me. He's pleading for me to trust him on this. Trust that he'll be able to fix whatever it is that's going on. And to tell the truth, as much as I want to know, I don't think I can handle another problem on my already full plate. Okay, I sigh. His brows furrow, and he cocks his head to the side.
Really?
He's astounded by how easy it was to persuade me to back off, I'm sure. Yes. I'll do my best not to worry about the situation with my dad, as long as you can promise me that it's better for me not to know. He nods.
I promise.
I believe him, mostly. Fine. I finalize the agreement with the word and try my best to push my obsessive need to know what's happening to the back of my mind. I need to trust Hardin with this. I need to trust him of my own resolve. If I can't trust him with this, how can I entertain a future for us at all? I sigh, and Hardin smiles at my acquiescence. Chapter 102. Tessa.
Looks like I'll be filling out these thank you cards to the guests who made last night's club opening such a big success, Kimberly says, with a wry grin and a wave of an envelope when I enter the kitchen. What are the two of you planning for today?
A look at the stack of cards she's already addressed and the pile she's still working on makes me wonder just how many businesses Christian has invested in, if all those people she's writing to were partners of some sort. The size of this house alone has to mean he has more enterprises going on than just Vance Publishing and a single jazz club. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out when Hardin gets out of the shower, I tell her, and slide a fresh stack of small envelopes across the granite countertop. I had to force Hardin into the bathroom to take a shower alone. He was still irritated with me for locking him out of the bathroom while I took mine. No matter how many times I tried to explain to him how awkward I'd feel if the Vances knew we were showering together in their home, he'd give me a weird little look and argue that we'd done much worse in their house than shower together over the past 12 hours. I stood my ground despite his pleading. The events in the gym were motivated by pure lust and were entirely unplanned. The love we made in my bedroom isn't an issue because it's my bedroom for now, and I'm an adult having consensual sex with my... whatever it is that Hardin is to me right now. The shower thing, however, makes me feel differently. Being the stubborn man he is, Hardin still didn't agree, which led to me asking him to get me a glass of water from the kitchen. I pouted, and he fell for it. The moment he left the room, I jetted down the hall to the bathroom, locking the door behind me and ignoring his annoyed demands for me to let him in.
You should make him take you sightseeing, Kimberly tells me. Maybe throwing yourselves into the culture of the city will help him with his decision to move here with you.
This kind of weighty conversation is not something that I want to deal with right now. So... Sasha seemed nice, I say, to not so covertly move the conversation away from my relationship issues. Kimberly snorts.
Sasha? Nice? Not so much.
She knows that Max is married, doesn't she?
Of course she does.
She licks her lips.
But does she care? No, not at all. She likes his money and the expensive jewelry that comes along with seeing him. She could care less about his wife and daughter. The disapproval in Kim's voice is heavy, and I'm relieved to find that we're in agreement on this subject. Max is a jerk, but I'm still surprised that he'd have the nerve to bring her around other people. I mean, doesn't he care if Denise or Lillian find out about her? I suspect that Denise already knows. With a guy like Max, there have been plenty of other Sashas over the years. And poor Lillian already despises her father, so it wouldn't make any difference if she knew. That's so sad. They've been married since college, right? I don't know how much Kimberly knows about Max and his family, but given her gossiping ways, I'm sure it's not nothing. They married right out of college. It was quite the scandal. Kimberly's eyes light up with the thrill of spilling such a juicy story to my unknowing ears. Apparently, Max was sent to marry someone else, some woman whose family was close with his. It was basically a business deal. Max's father came from old money. I think that's at least part of why Max is such an asshole. Denise was heartbroken when he told her of his plan to marry another woman. Kimberly speaks as if she was actually present at the time all this was happening, instead of just passing along gossip. Maybe, though, that's what gossips always feel like. She takes a sip of water before continuing. Anyway, after graduation, Max rebelled against his father and literally left the woman waiting at the altar. On the very day of the wedding, he showed up at Trish and Ken's place in his tuxedo and waited outside the door until Denise came out. That same night, the five of them bribed a pastor using a fancy bottle of scotch and the little bit of cash in their pockets. Denise and Max were married just before midnight, and she was pregnant with Lillian a few weeks later. My brain has a hard time picturing Max as a lovesick young man, rushing through the streets of London in a tuxedo, tracking down the woman he loved, the same woman that he now repeatedly betrays by hopping into bed with the likes of Sasha. I don't mean to intrude, but was Christian's... I'm unsure what to call her. I mean, Smith's mother, was she... With an understanding smile, Kimberly ends my awkward fumbling. Rose came along many years later. Christian was always the fifth wheel with the two couples. Once he and Ken stopped speaking and Christian came to America, that's when Christian met Rose. How long were they married? I search Kimberly's face for signs of discomfort. I don't want to intrude, but I can't help being fascinated by the history of this group of friends. I hope that Kimberly knows me well enough by now not to be surprised by how many questions I'm prone to ask. Only 2 years. They'd only been dating a few months before she got sick. Her voice cracks and she swallows, tears brimming in her eyes. He married her anyway. She was taken down the aisle, in a wheelchair, by her father who insisted on doing it. Halfway to the altar, Christian stepped down and pushed her the rest of the way. Kimberly breaks into sobs, and I brush away the tears that are falling from my eyes. "I'm sorry," she says with a wan smile. "I haven't told this story in a long time, and it just makes me so emotional." She reaches across the countertop to pull a wad of tissues from a box and passes one to me. Just thinking about it always shows me that behind his smart mouth and brilliant mind, there is an incredible, loving man. She looks at me, then down at the stacks of envelopes. "Shit, I got tears on the cards," she exclaims, recovering quickly. I want to ask her more questions about Rose and Smith, Ken and Trish in their college days, but I don't want to push her. He loved Rose, and she healed him, even in her dying days. He only loved one woman his entire life, and she finally broke him of that. The story, as lovely as it is, only confuses me further. Who was this woman that Christian loved, and why did he need healing after this? Kimberly blows her nose and looks up. I turn to the doorway, where Hardin awkwardly glances back and forth between Kimberly and me, taking in the scene unfolding in the kitchen.
"Well, I obviously showed up at the wrong time," he says.
I can't help but smile at how we must look, crying for no apparent reason, two massive stacks of cards and envelopes sitting in front of us on the countertop. Hardin's hair is wet from his shower, and his face is freshly shaven. He looks incredible in a plain black T-shirt and jeans. He's wearing nothing on his feet except socks, and his expression is wary as he silently beckons me to him.
"Should I expect you two for dinner tonight?"
Kimberly asks, as I cross the room to stand at Hardin's side. "Yes," I respond, at the same time that Hardin says,
"No."
Kim laughs and shakes her head.
Well, text me when you two come to an agreement. A few minutes later, as Harden and I reach the front door, Christian suddenly pops out from a side room sporting a huge grin.
It's freezing outside. Where's your coat, boy? First off, I don't need a coat. Second, don't call me boy.
Harden rolls his eyes. Christian pulls a heavy navy blue pea coat from the rack next to the door.
Here, wear this. It's like a damn heater in and of itself. Hell no.
Harden scoffs, and I can't help but laugh.
Don't be an idiot. It's 20 degrees outside. Your lady may need you to keep her warm.
Christian teases, and Harden's eyes assess my thick purple sweater, purple coat, and purple beanie, which he hasn't stopped teasing me about since I pushed it onto my head. I wore this same outfit the night that he took me ice skating, and he teased me then, too. Some things never change.
Fine.
Harden grumbles and pushes his long arms into the coat. I'm not surprised to find that he pulls off the look. Even the large bronze buttons that line the front of the jacket somehow assume a masculine edge when mixed with Harden's simple style. His new jeans, which I have grown really fond of, and his plain black t-shirt, black boots, and now this coat, make him look like he was plucked straight from the pages of a magazine. It's simply not fair the way he looks so effortlessly perfect.
Stare much?
I jump slightly at Harden's words. In turn, I'm granted a smirk and a warm hand wrapped around mine. Just then, Kimberly rushes through the living room and into the foyer, followed by Smith calling,
"Wait! Smith wants to ask you something."
She looks down at her soon-to-be stepson with a loving smile.
"Go ahead, sweetie."
The blonde boy looks directly at Harden. "Can you take a picture for my school thing?"
"What?"
Harden's face slightly pales and he looks at me. I know how he feels about being photographed.
"It's sort of a collage he's doing. He said he wants your picture, too,"
Kimberly tells Harden, and I look over to him, pleading with him not to deny the boy who clearly idolizes him.
Sure?
Harden shifts on his heels and looks at Smith.
"Can Tessa be in the picture, too?"
Smith shrugs. "I guess so." I smile at him, but he doesn't seem to notice. Harden shoots me a he-likes-me-more-than-you-and-I-don't-even-have-to-try look, and I discreetly elbow him as we walk into the living room. I pull the beanie from my head and use the band on my wrist to pull my hair back for the picture. Harden's beauty is so unforced and natural. All he has to do is stand there with his uncomfortable frown on his face, and he looks perfect.
"I'll take it quickly,"
Kimberly says. Harden moves closer to me and lazily hooks his arm around my waist. I give my best smile while he attempts to smile without showing his teeth. I nudge him, and his smile brightens just in time for Kimberly to take the shot. "Thank you." I can see that she's genuinely pleased.
"Let's go,"
Harden says, and I nod, giving Smith a small wave before following Harden through the foyer to the front door. "That was so nice of you," I tell him.
"Whatever."
He smiles and covers my mouth with his. I hear the small click of a camera and pull away from him to find Kimberly with the camera again held to her face. Harden turns his head to hide in my hair, and she takes another shot.
"Enough, shit,"
he groans and drags me out the door.
"What is with this family and their videos and pictures?"
he rambles on, and I close the heavy door behind me. "Videos?" I ask.
"Never mind."
The cold air whips around us, and I quickly put my hair down and pull my hat back over my head.
"We'll take your car and get an oil change first,"
Harden says over the howling wind. I dig into the front pockets of my coat to retrieve my keys to give to him, but he shakes his head and dangles his keychain in front of my face. It's now furnished with one key bearing a familiar green band.
"You didn't take your key back when you left all your gifts,"
he says. Oh. My mind fills with the memory of leaving my most precious possessions in a pile on the bed we once shared. I'd like those things back soon, if that's okay. Harden climbs into the car without another glance my way, mumbling over his shoulder,
Yeah, sure.
Once we're inside the car, Harden turns the heat all the way up and reaches across to grab my hand. He rests both of our hands on my thigh, and his fingers trace a thoughtful pattern over my wrist where the bracelet would normally rest.
"I hate that you left it there. It should be here."
He presses against the base of my wrist. "I know. My voice is barely a whisper. I miss that bracelet every day. My e-reader, too. I want the letter he wrote me back as well. I want to be able to read it over and over." "Maybe you can bring them when you come back next weekend?" I ask, hopeful.
Yeah, sure,
he says, but his eyes stay focused on the road. Why are we getting an oil change anyway, I ask him. We finally make it out of the long driveway and turn onto the residential road.
You need one.
He gestures toward the small sticker on the windshield.
Okay. What?
He glowers at me. Nothing. It's just an odd thing to do, to take someone's car to get an oil change.
I've been the only one taking your car for an oil change for months. Why would it surprise you now?
He's right. He's always the one to take my car for any type of maintenance it may need, and sometimes I suspect he's being paranoid and has things fixed or replaced that don't need to be. I don't know. I guess I forget that we were a normal couple sometimes, I admit, fidgeting in my seat.
Explain.
It's hard to remember the small, normal things like oil changes or the time you let me braid your hair. I smile at the memory, when we always seem to be going through some sort of crisis.
First of all,
he smirks,
don't ever mention that hair-braiding fiasco again. You know damned well that the only reason I let that happen was because you bribed me with head and cookies.
He gently squeezes my thigh, and a rush of heat flares under my skin.
Second, I guess you're right in a way. It would be nice if your memories of me weren't tainted by my constant habit of fucking everything up.
It's not only you. We both made mistakes, I correct him. Harden's mistakes usually caused much more damage than mine, but I'm not innocent either. We need to stop blaming ourselves or each other and try to reach some sort of middle ground, together. That can't happen if Harden continues to beat himself up over every mistake he's made in the past. He has to find a way to forgive himself, so he can move on and be the person I know he really wants to be.
You didn't,
he retorts, fighting back. Instead of the two of us going back and forth over who made mistakes and who didn't, let's decide what we're going to do with our day after the oil change.
You'll get an iPhone,
he says. How many times do I have to tell you that I don't want an iPhone? I grumble. My phone is slow, yes, but iPhones are expensive and complicated. Two things I can't afford to add to my life right now.
Everyone wants an iPhone. You're just one of those people who don't want to give in to the trend.
He looks over at me, and I see his dimples pucker evilly.
That's why you were still wearing floor-length skirts in college.
Finding himself absolutely hilarious, he fills the car with his laughter. I playfully scowl at his overused dig. I can't afford one right now anyway. I have to save my money for an apartment and groceries. You know, the necessities. I roll my eyes, but smile back at him to soften the blow.
Imagine the things we could do if you had an iPhone, too. There'd be even more ways for us to communicate. And you know I'd get it for you, so don't mention the money again.
What I can imagine is doing things like tracking my phone so you could see where I go, I tease, ignoring his overpowering need to buy me things.
No, like we could video chat.
Why would we do that? He looks at me as if I've grown another set of eyes and shakes his head.
Because imagine being able to see me each day on your shiny new iPhone screen.
Images of phone sex and video chats immediately spring into mind, and I shamelessly run through shots of Harden touching himself on the screen. What is wrong with me? My cheeks heat, and I can't help but glance at his lap. With one finger under my chin, Harden tilts my face up to look at him.
You're thinking about it. Going over all the dirty shit I could do to you via iPhone.
No, I'm not. Holding tight to my stubborn refusal to get a new cell phone, I change the subject. My new office is nice. The view is incredible.
Is it?
Harden's tone immediately turns somber. Yes, and the view from the lunchroom is even better. Trevor's office has... I stop myself from finishing the sentence, but it's too late. Harden is already glaring at me, expecting me to finish.
No, no. Continue.
Trevor's office has the best view, I tell him, my voice coming out much more clear and steady than I'm feeling on the inside.
Just how often are you in his office, Tessa?
Harden's eyes flicker to me and then back to the road. I've been there twice this week. We have lunch together.
You what?
Harden snaps. I knew I should have waited until after dinner to bring up Trevor, or not brought him up at all. I shouldn't even have mentioned his name. I have lunch with him usually, I admit. Unfortunately for me, at that moment my car is stopped at a red light, leaving me no choice but to be at the receiving end of Harden's glare.
Every day?
Yes.
Is there a reason behind it?
He's the only person I know that has the same lunch hour as me. Kimberly's so busy helping Christian that she hasn't even been taking a lunch hour. Both of my hands move in front of my face to aid in my explanation.
So have your lunch hour changed?
The light turns green, but Hardin doesn't step on the gas pedal until an angry horn sounds from behind us in the line of traffic. I'm not having my lunch hour changed. Trevor is my coworker. End of story.
Well?
Hardin breathes.
I would prefer you not to eat lunch with fucking Trevor. I can't stand him.
Laughing, I reach down onto my lap and place my hand on top of Hardin's. You're being irrationally jealous, and it happens that there's no one else for me to have lunch with, especially when the other two women that share the same lunch hour have been mean to me all week. He glances sideways at me while switching lanes smoothly.
What do you mean they've been mean to you?
They haven't been mean exactly. I don't know. Maybe I'm just paranoid.
What happened? Tell me.
He urges. It's nothing serious. I just get the feeling that they don't like me for some reason. I always catch the two of them laughing or whispering while staring at me. Trevor said they like to gossip, and I swear I heard them say something about how I got the job.
They said what?
Hardin sneers. His knuckles are white as he grips the steering wheel. They made a comment, something like, we know how she got the job anyway.
Did you say something to them? Or to Christian?
No, I don't want to cause problems. I've only been there a week, and I don't want to run and tattle on them like a schoolgirl.
Fuck that. You need to tell those women to fuck off, or I'll tell Christian myself. What are their names? I may know them.
It's not that big of a deal, I say, trying to deactivate the bomb I've clearly assembled myself. Every office has a set of catty women. The ones in mine just happen to have targeted me. I don't want this to be a thing. I just want to blend in there and maybe even make some friends.
Not likely to happen if you continue to let them act like bitches and hang out with fucking Trevor all day.
He licks his lips and takes a deep breath. I take an equally deep breath and look at him, debating whether or not to defend Trevor. Fuck it. Trevor is the only person there that makes any type of effort to be kind to me, and I already know him. That's why I spend my lunch hour with him. I stare out the window and watch my favorite city in the world pass by as I wait for the bomb to explode. When Hardin doesn't respond, I look over at him and his laser stare at the road ahead, then add, I really miss Landon.
He misses you too. So does your dad.
I sigh. I want to know how he is, but if I ask one question, it'll lead to 30. You know how I am. Worry blooms inside my chest, and I do my best to push it back down and lock it away.
I do know. That's why I won't answer them.
How's Karen? And your father? Is it sad that I miss those two more than I miss my own parents? I ask.
No, considering who your parents are.
He scrunches his nose.
To answer your question, they're good, I guess. I don't really pay attention.
I hope this place starts to feel like home soon, I say without thinking, and sink back into the leather seat.
You don't seem to like Seattle so far, so what the hell are you doing here?
Hardin pulls my car into the lot of a small building. Plastered on the front is a massive yellow sign promising 15-minute oil changes and friendly service. I don't know how to answer him. I'm afraid to share my fears and doubts about my recent move with Hardin. Not because I don't trust him, but because I don't want him to use them as an opening to push me to leave Seattle. I could really use a big pep talk right now, but frankly, would settle for silence over the I told you so I'm most likely to hear from Hardin. It's not that I don't like it here. I'm just not used to it yet. It's only been 1 week, and I'm used to my routine and Landon and you, I explain.
I'll pull into the line and meet you inside,
Hardin tells me, without a word regarding my response. With a nod, I climb out of the car and hurry out of the cold and into the small mechanic shop. The scent of burned rubber and stale coffee fills the waiting room. I'm staring at a framed photograph of an old-fashioned car when I feel Hardin's hand come to rest on the small of my back.
It shouldn't be too long.
He takes my hand in his and leads me to the dusty leather couch in the center of the room. 20 minutes later, he's on his feet, pacing back and forth across the black-and-white tiled flooring. A bell chimes through the room, signaling that someone has joined us.
The sign outside says 15-minute oil change.
Hardin snaps at the young man wearing oil-stained coveralls.
Yeah, it does.
The man shrugs. The cigarette tucked behind his ear falls down onto the counter, and he quickly retrieves it with a gloved hand.
Are you shitting me?
Hardin growls, his patience clearly grown thin.
It's almost done,
the mechanic assures him before exiting the waiting room just as abruptly as he entered. I don't blame him. I turn to Hardin and rise to my feet. It's fine. We aren't in a hurry.
He's wasting my time with you. I have less than 24 hours with you, and he's fucking wasting it.
It's fine. I walk across the tile floor to stand in front of him. We're here together. I push my hands into the pockets of Christian's coat, and he presses his lips into a tight line to keep his frown from turning into a smile.
If they aren't done within 10 minutes, I'm not paying for this shit,
he threatens, and I shake my head at him and bury my head in his chest.
Don't apologize to that guy for me either.
He reaches under my chin with his thumb and lifts my head to look into my eyes.
I know you're planning to.
He places a soft kiss against my lips, and I find myself hungry and anxious for more. The topics of discussion in the car have proven to be sore spots for us in the past, yet we made the entire drive here without a major blow-up. I'm surprisingly giddy over that. Or maybe it's Hardin's warm arms wrapping around my waist, or his usual minty scent laced with Christian's cologne that he borrowed. Whatever it is, I'm aware of the fact that we're the only people waiting in the small shop, and I'm surprised by Hardin's affectionateness as he kisses me again. This time, his lips press much harder, and his tongue swipes out to meet mine. My hands find their way into his hair, and I tug gently at the ends, making him groan and tighten his grip on my waist. He brings my body flush to his mouth still claiming mine until the shrill sound of the bell goes off, making me jump away from him and smooth my hand over my beanie out of nervousness alone.
All done,
the cigarette-toting man from minutes ago announces.
About time,
Hardin rudely remarks, and pulls his wallet from his back pocket, shooting me a warning glare when I do the same.
Chapter 103 Hardin.
He wasn't staring at me,
she says, trying to convince me as we finally reach her car, which I was forced to park in the farthest possible spot away from the restaurant. He was panting over his lasagna. There was a line of drool hanging from his chin to prove it. The man's eyes were glued to Tessa the entire time that I tried to enjoy our overpriced, oversourced pasta plate. I want to press it further, but I decide against it. She didn't even notice the man's attention. She was too busy smiling and talking with me to give him a second glance. Her smiles are bright and honest. Her patience with my annoyed remarks about waiting too long for a table was remarkable, and she seems to always find a way to touch me. A hand on mine, a soft brush of her fingers over my arm, her soft hand brushing the mop of hair off my forehead. She's constantly touching me, and I feel like a fucking kid on Christmas. If I were to know how being excited on Christmas as a child actually felt. I turn the heat in the car to the highest setting, wanting to get her warmed up as quickly as possible. Her nose and cheeks are an adorable shade of red, and I can't help but lean over and run my cold hand across her quivering lips.
Well, it's a shame that he'll be paying so much for drool-filled lasagna then, huh?
She giggles, and I lean over to silence her corny remark by pressing my mouth to hers. Come here, I groan. I gently pull her onto my lap by the sleeves of her purple jacket. She doesn't protest. Instead, she climbs over the small barrier of armrests and onto my lap. Her mouth is steady on mine, and I possessively stake my claim by pulling her body as close to mine as the awkward design of this small car will allow. She gasps when I pull the lever on the seat to cause it to lie back, and her body falls onto mine.
I'm still sore, she tells me,
and I gently pull away from her. I just wanted to kiss you, I tell her. It's true. Not that I would turn down making love to her in the front seat of her car, but it wasn't on my mind at the time.
I want to, though,
she shyly admits, turning her head slightly to hide from my view. We can go home. Well, to your place.
Why not here?
Hello, Tessa? I wave my hand in front of her face, and she looks up at me, bewildered.
Have you seen Tessa around anywhere?
because this hormone-addled, sex-crazed woman wiggling in my lap is certainly not her. I tease, and she catches on, finally.
I'm not sex-crazed,
she pouts, pushing out her lower lip, and I lean up to catch it between my teeth. Her hips move against me, and I scan the parking lot. The sun has begun to set already, the thick air and cloudy skies making it appear to be even later than it actually is. The parking lot is nearly full of cars, though, and the last thing I want is someone catching us fucking in public. She pulls her mouth from mine and trails her lips down the column of my neck.
I'm stressed, and you've been gone, and I love you.
Despite the blasting heat pouring from the vents, a shiver rakes down my spine, and she reaches between us to palm me through my jeans.
So, maybe I'm a little hormonal. It's almost, you know, that time.
She whispers the last two words as if they're a dirty secret.
Oh, now I get it.
I grin, concocting vulgar jokes in my mind to tease her with the entire week, the way I always do. She reads my mind.
Don't say a word,
she scolds, gently squeezing and kneading my cock while her mouth moves against my neck.
Then stop doing that before I come in my pants. I've already done that too many times since I met you. Yeah, you have.
She bites down on my flesh, and my hips betray me by lifting to meet her torturous, swirling movements.
Let's go back.
If someone sees you like this, riding me in the middle of the parking lot, I'd have to kill them. Thoughtfully, Tessa glances around the parking lot, surveying the surroundings, and I watch as the realization of our location sinks in.
Fine.
She pouts again, and climbs back into the passenger seat.
Look how the tables have turned.
I wince as her hand cups me again and squeezes. She sweetly smiles as if she didn't just make a mild attempt to castrate me.
Just drive.
I'll run every red light so I can get you home and give you your fix, I tease her. She rolls her eyes and rests her head against the window. By the time we reach the next red light, she's fast asleep. I reach over to make sure she's still warm. Tiny drops of sweat bead her forehead in her sleep, making me cut the heat off immediately. Deciding to enjoy the soft noises of her muted slumber, I take the long way back to Vance's house. I gently shake her shoulder to wake her.
Tessa, we're back.
Her eyes pop open, and she blinks rapidly to assess her location.
It's already so late?
She asks, glancing at the clock on her dashboard.
There was traffic.
I say. Truth is, I drove around the city trying to find whatever it is that has her so captivated. It was a lost cause. I couldn't find it through the freezing air, or the bumper-to-bumper traffic, or the drawbridge causing that traffic. The only thing that made sense to me was the sleeping girl in my car. Despite the hundreds of buildings that line and light up the skyline, she's the only thing that could make this city worth a damn.
I'm still so tired. I think I ate too much.
She half smiles and pushes me away when I offer to carry her to her room. She lumbers like a zombie through Vance's house, and the moment her head hits the pillow, she's asleep again. I carefully undress her and pull the duvet over her half-naked body, laying my worn T-shirt next to her head in hopes that she'll put it on when she wakes. I stare over at her. Her lips are parted slightly, and her arms are wrapped around one of mine like she's holding a soft pillow instead of a hard arm. It can't be comfortable for her, but she's sound asleep, holding on to me as if she's afraid I'll disappear. I think, maybe, if I continue to not be a fuck-up during the week, I'll be rewarded with times like this every weekend. And that's enough for me to hold on to, until she can see how devoted I am to improving myself for her.
How many times are you going to call me?
I bark through the line.
My phone has been buzzing all night and morning with my mum's name flashing on the screen. Tessa keeps waking up and, in turn, waking me up. I swear I put the damn thing on silent the last time.
You should have answered. I have something important to talk to you about.
Her voice is soft, and I can't remember the last time I spoke to her.
Get to it, then.
I groan, and instinctively lean up to turn the lamp on. The light from the small lamp is much too bright for this early hour, so I tug the string and return the room to its original state of darkness.
Well, here goes.
She lets out a deep breath.
Mike and I are going to be married.
She squeals into the phone, and I move the device from my ear for a moment to save my hearing.
Okay,
I say, expecting more.
Aren't you surprised?
She questions, obviously disappointed in my reaction.
He told me he was going to ask you, and I figured you'd say yes. What is there to be surprised about? He told you?
Yeah, I say, looking at the dark, rectangular shapes of some photos hanging on the wall.
Well, what do you think about it?
Does it matter? I ask her.
Of course it matters, Harden.
My mum sighs, and I sit up fully. Tessa stirs in her sleep and reaches for me.
I don't care either way. I was a little surprised, but what do I care if you get married?
I whisper, wrapping my legs around Tessa's smooth legs.
I'm not asking for your permission. I just wanted to see how you felt about the whole thing, so I could tell you the reason I've been calling you all morning.
I'm fine with it. Now tell me.
As you know, Mike thought it would be a good idea to sell the house.
And?
Well, it's sold. The new owners won't be moving in until next month, until after the wedding.
Next month? I rub my temples with my index finger. I knew I shouldn't have picked up the damn phone this early.
We were going to wait until next year, but neither of us is getting any younger, and with Mike's son going off to university, there's no better time than now. It should start warming up in the next few months, but we don't want to wait. It may be chilly, but it won't be unbearable. You'll come, won't you, and bring Tessa?
So the wedding is next month, or in 2 weeks? My brain doesn't function this fucking early.
2 weeks!
She responds with glee.
I don't think I can.
I trail off. It's not that I don't want to join the joyous festivities of a requited love and all that shit, but I don't want to go all the way to England. And I know Tessa isn't going to come along on such short notice, especially given the state of our relationship right now.
Why not? I'll ask her myself if I...
No, you won't. I cut her off. Realizing that I'm being a little harsh, I backtrack. She doesn't even have a passport. It's an excuse, but a truthful one.
She can get one within 2 weeks if they expedite it.
I sigh. I don't know, Mum. Give me a little time to think about it. It's 7 in the damn morning. I groan and end the call. Then I realize I didn't even say congratulations. Fuck. Well, it's not like she expected it from me necessarily. From down the hall, I hear someone scavenging through fucking cabinets. I pull the thick duvet over my head to drown out the noise of slamming and the obnoxious beeping of a dishwasher. But the noises don't abate. The cacophony continues until I guess I just fall asleep in spite of it. Chapter 104. Harden. It's a little past 8, and I can see through the living room to the kitchen, where Tessa is fully dressed, eating breakfast with Kimberly. Shit, it's Monday already. She has to go to work, and I have to drive back to school. I'll miss today's classes, but I couldn't care less. I'll have my diploma in less than 2 months.
Are you going to wake him up?
Kimberly asks Tessa, just as I walk in.
I'm up, I groan, still groggy from sleep. I slept more peacefully last night than I have